Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today, one in five children struggle with obesity in the United States, yet only 2% of children eat a healthy diet that meets federal nutrition recommendations. I guess I wonder why I say yet only. Of course, if one in five are struggling with obesity, something, you know, their healthy diet or lack thereof must have something to do with it. Part of the problem, long has rested in the schools, where children spend much of their day for 9 months of the year. Many kids eat not only lunch, but also breakfast and snacks at school these days. So British chef Jamie Oliver highlighted that connection in his ABC reality series, Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution. Yes, I did try to get him on the show. No, he's waiting to get renewed, and he's not doing any shows right now. But First Lady Michelle Obama also wouldn't be on the show. She's made an issue of the childhood obesity. They actually made that issue her number one initiative. In Ohio, there's a new law headed to the governor for his signature that would require schools to offer healthier options, among other things. We'll talk about that later with one of the lead sponsors of the measure, and we'll also talk with the chef from or the person in charge of the Cleveland School District's food program. But right now is Granville a high school executive chef Greg Enslin. He has joined the Granville has joined the very few schools across the country that have committed to bring more farm fresh food into their cafeterias. Greg actually works for a company that does the school catering for Granville schools. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thank you.
And also Noreen Warnock, she's a public policy and community relations director for Local Matters. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Greg, this year Granville School's lunch menu favors fresh and local products and produce and other foods. Districts often complain that that approach is too expensive. That's been the reason for not doing it, on Jamie Oliver's program for that. How do you make it affordable?
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, the price-wise, the price points are there. Plus, the kids are eating the food, so it falls in line.
Well, can you give us a sense about where that attitude comes from, that it's too expensive to do it?
Not sure where the attitude comes. I mean, everyone sees the prices of fresh produce, and they think it's out of reach, but it's not really out of reach. I mean, I haven't had a problem with the budgeting to make it work.
Could it be that a lot of school districts now contract out? Now, they are with you.
Yes.
AVI is a contractor. They're contracting out with you, but that they contract out, and therefore now a profit factor has been is brought into the equation. So that someone wants to make a profit, and if it's cheaper to do chicken tenders than fresh turkey sandwiches, that's what they're going to do to get the protein.
Well, the school district brought AVI in for the specific reasons to be healthier and the local sustainability. So, I mean, that's when we came in, that's the only thing we've been looking for.
Is health and sustainability.
Health and sustainability.
Now, AVI, you said that Granville Schools is your flagship in this regard. You cater to other schools, but Granville's the only one that's contracting you to do this like
the
this.
The K-12.
Uh-huh.
Kenyon College was pretty much the flagship for the sustainability, and a lot of the research, the local farming, is branched out through Kenyon College.
Okay. So what is it about AVI? When did it occur to you guys to make this an option for school districts?
Just the fact of that's where people are going, the healthy, the whole family, the way the company is run, family-run company, and that's what we're looking for is healthy alternatives for the kids.
So when you're pitching this, is this something that you're pitching to other school districts as an option?
Oh, yeah.
You could do this? Does it cost more for the districts?
I don't think it really costs any more. I mean, if you
so
can get
the... So why aren't they doing it then?
I can't tell you why they're not doing it. All I know is since we've been doing it, I mean, my participation for lunch has been from 22% to 57%.
In just 1 year?
Just 1 year.
Right.
And I mean, we didn't start out as full force as I think we could have. I mean, baby steps into the process. I mean, next year we've got even more local farmers lined up, and it's going to be more local than what we did this year. This year, if it wasn't local, it was fresh. Now we're going to do more of the local.
Noreen, what do you make of the – I hate to use the word excuses because it's pejorative, and I don't want to, knock necessarily the districts that are struggling, so many of them with funding problems. But what do you make of that explanation that it's too expensive? We can't afford it.
I think it's lack of experience. It's something new, and it hasn't been tried in a lot of districts. And I think that when you start looking at what's been done in other parts of the country, for example, in Maryland, every single county in the state of Maryland has some form of purchasing local food. So it's getting done in lots of places, and we just haven't really experienced it very much yet in districts in Ohio. And I think that as districts start doing things, they will see that it's actually a lot easier, and in some cases, it's even less expensive. We have met with many food service directors around the country who have talked about how there's in season, there's some of the food that they can actually get that's less expensive.
There's kind of three issues going on here. Fresh, local, and nutritional. They don't always – how do you get fresh food all year long and still stay local?
Well, in some places, and we are working on this with others in Ohio. I mean, one of the things we have going for us in Ohio in some ways is that we're quote-unquote behind, that we don't have a lot of these programs, but we're also benefiting – because we've been careful and in many cases thoughtful, and we're able to look at what's going on in other places around the country. So one thing that we're looking at that has been successfully done in other places is flash freezing. So you take the products that are in season, flash freeze them, and make them available throughout the entire school year. We're also doing a lot of work with developing hoop houses and seasonal extension production in Ohio.
What's a hoop house?
A hoop house is I'll maybe have my own ignorance here, show, but usually made out of, as far as I know, a plastic material that's over a form of rebar, and it's kind of a greenhouse that can be pretty easily and not too expensively installed over beds of that are producing food for our system.
If you're just joining us, it's All Sides with Dan Fisher on WOSU 820. And my guest in this segment, Greg Enslin. He is the executive chef for Granville High Schools via his employer, AVI. This Granville's the only school district right now that they are catering to with the fresh and local theme. They hope to have more. And also Noreen Warnock, she is with Local Matters, Community Relations Director. Local Matters, tell us about Local Matters and what its connection is, Noreen, with the farm to school program.
Local Matters is a Central Ohio-based not-for-profit that's working to create healthy communities through the lens of food. And we believe that there's no issue that you can't connect to food, for example, obesity and diabetes, maintaining and in some cases restoring our environment, economic viability, you name it, you can connect it to food. And we are working with three programs, local food to school, healthful living, and also healthful access to food, and farm to fork program. And all of those are helping us work on connecting farms and schools in our area. And we're also working with many agencies, many other not-for-profits in our area, all the way from the Columbus Health Department to MORPSI, the Ohio State University, Nationwide Children's. There's a lot of organizations and others who are working on this.
You know, it's really about more than what the kids are actually eating, though. One of the big disconnects is their relationship with food and where it comes from. And, you know, back in the olden days when I was in grade school, they actually prepared the food in the kitchen there at the school. It wasn't a district-wide thing. It wasn't something that was catered in by another company. What do you know about kids' connections with food? I mean, Jamie Oliver's reality series brought some of that out, but is that the case everywhere where kids don't recognize common vegetables and that sort of thing?
They don't. And one of the programs that Local Matters has is a food as elementary education program. We're teaching about 900 kids a week in Central Ohio about food, where their food comes from, how to recognize foods, the nutritional value of foods, and we also do a multi-sensory hands-on cooking demonstrations and have the kids actually involved in cooking in these classes. And this is really important. It didn't take us a short time to get to this problem of kids not recognizing food and not understanding what healthy choices are for the kind of food that they should eat. So to have a deep education program like ours that's 28 weeks, 45 to 55 minutes a week for the entire school year, plus it works with the teachers and members of the community, is something that we feel a deep commitment to and hope that our whole state feels a commitment to, because we really have to make this a very serious discussion and finding the solutions given the level of serious issues that have come out of the food choices that are being made.
What do we know about kids' willingness to eat nutritionally once they understand what nutrition means?
Well,
because in some places they say, well, they won't eat it. We can give
it to
them,
but
they won't eat it.
Well, I was quite amazed that...
I'm kind of surprised by that statistic as well.
I was really amazed that when we first started, the first 2 weeks, I was really concerned that I hadn't ordered enough fresh vegetables because the kids ate a lot of vegetables, and it was taken back. I was taken back by the fact that so many students knew what vegetables were. We took a fifth grade tour to Whole Foods, and we were just holding things up, and they knew what the vegetables were. So I think the education, like at least in Grandview, is online with where it needs to be.
Okay, and that's going to lead to another question later about, does that always translate into the larger school districts, the more urban school districts, the higher density school districts? But we have to take a break right now. And when we return, I hope that State Rep John Patrick Carney will be on the line with us to talk more about this and to talk about Ohio's Healthy Choices for Healthy Children Act that is expected to be signed by the governor very, very soon. If you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to Facebook, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and put your questions or comments there, and we'll get them on the air as soon as we can. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. At noon, fresh air will be here. Internal documents point to BP's repeated disregard for safety and environmental rules. A discussion with an investigative reporter with ProPublica, who got access to documents he's been investigating both oil and gas drilling. That discussion is on fresh air at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email and sign up for one of our e-newsletters. 76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunshine today and a high right around 82. Clear skies tonight and a low of 60 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I had my script mixed up, apparently, because State Rep John Patrick Carney isn't with us yet. Right now, we have with us Regis Balaban. He is the Food and Child Nutrition Services Executive Director for the Cleveland Metropolitan School District. And Regis, I'm glad you're first because it flows right with my train of thought. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Ann.
We were talking with Greg Enslin. He's the executive chef for the company that caters for the Granville High School. And, you know, so far so good there. And I was thinking, okay, it's one school in a school district. Or is it the entire district?
Entire district.
Okay. But it's still a small school district.
Yes.
Cleveland is a big whopping school district. What is your plan in Cleveland to up the level of nutrition and freshness in the foods there?
And it's a good question because for a number of years in our school district, we've been making a number of nutritional enhancements. And to be very frank with you, you know, I'm kind of glad to see that the Institute of Medicine is making some recommendations that we implemented some of them back in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
We changed from 2% milk to chocolate milk in 1991. We changed from 2% to 1% milk in white milk in 94.
Do you mean that you changed from chocolate milk to 2%?
No, what we were serving 2% chocolate milk.
Okay, gotcha.
And
okay.
I made a requirement, a request of our dairies that I wanted 1%.
Okay.
And in fact, what we're doing this year, we just finalized our milk bid, and I wrote into the specs that we're going to make a request to lower the calories down from 160 to 150 calories. And I've also indicated that we were going to lower the grams from anywhere from 27-28% down to 22 grams.
Of fat?
Yes. No, I'm sorry, sugar grams.
Sugar, okay.
Right. And also, you know, I've requested that they remove high fructose corn syrup as an ingredient. So we're moving in the right direction on a number of things.
A lot of times you hear, and I don't know if you watched the Jamie Oliver Food Revolution.
I did.
Okay. It's a nice common denominator to talk about from which to discuss this. So the school district that he was working with in, I think it was West Virginia or Kentucky, said, this is too expensive. We can't afford it. Is it too expensive? Is it difficult to provide those kind of things?
Well, yes, to be honest about it, yes, it is.
How so?
Well, the fact of the matter is that as companies are requested to make changes in their formulas, at that point in time, they're not really sure what the cost is going to be. And, you know, naturally, over a period of time, they're using a certain formula, they're buying in certain types of ingredients to develop that product. And as the industry has been changing because of naturally the obesity in the country and, you know, the focus on it, they need to go back to the drawing board and come up with different types of items that they're making, and how do they still make it compatible to, you know, what they've been serving before and compatible to their customers. So unknown to them on what changes they need to make and what is the cost of that new product or new ingredient that's going to go into it. So, you know, let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to whole wheat and whole grain products. You know, when USDA made it a requirement that we had to be serving 51% of whole grain product, when we were buying in just a regular dinner roll that has to meet the school lunch pattern, and we started to meet that requirement of 51% or more, our cost per serving went up eight cents just for a roll. So, you know, as changes are being made, naturally there's going to be some type of an additional cost. And, you know, we as school food service directors and also as health issues are occurring, we need to make a decision. Do we want to pay for this upfront and eliminate health costs as they are now? Or do we pay for it later in the health benefits and the health costs and the hospitalization charges we're seeing?
Yeah, there are a lot of statistics linked with much, something like 83% of our health care money goes to a disproportionately high percentage of cases that involve obesity and people who are overweight.
Absolutely.
I'm going to ask the folks to put Representative Carney on the show now, but I wanted to ask you, Greg Enslin, is there an economies of scale? Wouldn't it be even cheaper yet if all the schools that AVI serves were on the same game plan?
It would probably be cheaper, but local and sustainability, it doesn't make a difference how far away. I mean, they're going to be too far away. I mean, we're working on a 50-mile radius. And if you start bulk buying, it's not going to be the fresh local that we were using.
Okay. Representative Carney, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
State Representative John Patrick Carney with the Ohio House 22nd District includes Clintonville and is it Northwest Columbus?
In Dublin.
Okay. The Healthy Choices for Healthy Children Act is expected to be signed by the governor soon. You're the chief sponsor in the House. It ended up in a Senate bill, but the bills were merged, I guess, in conference committee, right?
Yeah, we were able to actually avoid a conference committee.
Okay.
And, this was a true bipartisan, bicameral effort by the four joint sponsors. And so given a time of great partisan rancoring, we're pretty excited that we were able to work so closely together to get this done.
Yeah, it really is something of a miracle. The measure increases nutrition standards for a la carte food and beverages served in schools, and it also requires students to get body mass index screenings. Is there anything else?
There's also an opt-in for physical activity. So originally the bill had a requirement of 30 minutes a day of physical activity. Through our conversations with school districts and the various organizations that represent the superintendents, the school boards, and the teachers, it was made apparent that there were some concerns about the costs associated with that. And so we tried to create as much flexibility as we could to make sure that it was as palatable to the districts as it possibly could be. But obviously, we're spending over $4 billion annually in the state of Ohio on obesity. This generation of children, given the statistics, is the first that's likely not to live as long as their parents because of the obesity epidemic. So it's something we absolutely need to do.
Yeah, and that's why it seems like a real big disconnect for somebody. You know, my lifestyle, I know that diet alone does not help me maintain a healthy weight. It's exercise. And how does 30 minutes of exercise cost anybody anything? Couldn't the kids just be near, you know, I mean, how do they base it? Do they have to have all of a sudden have special programs for exercise, or why does it cost so much?
Well, you know,
I think Worthington said $4 million a year.
Yeah, Worthington did say $4 million a year. I think there was a agreement to disagree a little bit on what the cost would be. There are schools already in the state who are doing physical activity on a day-to-day basis. Here in Columbus, there's schools in the Columbus City Schools that are doing 30 minutes of physical activity a day, and they were working it in by some days they had kids walk to school, some days they would have literally aerobic activity right next to their desk in class, and so we tried to build in as much flexibility as we possibly could to meet that 30 minutes. Biking to school would count, and so the schools continued to push back and say that there was going to be some cost. We initially indicated that they could have a waiver if there was going to be any additional cost, but I think it's something that we're going to continue to work with the schools on. We're coming up with a database of best practices that demonstrate that schools are able to do it without any additional cost, and we're hopeful that we're going to get more and more schools to sign on to opt into this physical activity.
What's the distinction regarding the a la carte category?
So the plate lunch is subsidized by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and that means that the federal government really are the only folks who can make changes to the plate lunch. And so we've been in contact with Senator Sherrod Brown's office specifically about getting some changes made to the plate lunch. As you're probably aware, the federal government subsidizes a lot of the foods that are being provided to schools. Unfortunately, a lot of those foods are not foods that we should be encouraging our young people to eat, whether they be French fries or other things. I mean, you know, albeit for me to say don't eat French fries ever, but it's in balance. And so the a la carte items are those things that you can get in the line that are separate and apart from the plate lunch. And so those all, when the contract comes to an end after the 2011 school year for districts, they will be required to meet the changes in the bill with respect to those a la carte food items, as well as the beverages that are sold both in the line as well as in the vending machine.
Okay, so the plate lunches, Greg Enslin, at Granville, is that the case at Granville or not, that you can't amend the plate lunches?
No, it's pretty well set forward.
Okay, that's the case in every school district. All right, so the only thing you can affect is the a la carte food and the beverages served in schools. It also requires students to get body mass index screenings. What are they supposed to do with body mass index screening results, Representative?
Well, I think there's two goals here. One is obviously to collect baseline data. Since we're implementing changes to food and beverage standards as well as encouraging physical activity, we want to be able to track that data to make sure it's having an impact on these young people. And if it's not, we need to recalibrate and come up with a solution that makes sure it's having an impact. A second part of it is to communicate that information back to parents so they have an understanding of what the health status of their child or children happens to be, and then provide them with information that they can use to better their nutrition at home, to encourage physical activity at home. We believe that this is an approach that it's not just about the schools getting involved. It's especially about parents getting involved. It's about businesses getting involved. It's all aspects of life. We need to be engaged. And so really the goal is to collect this data, send that data home to parents, and then use that data hopefully to inform our decision-making as we move forward.
At 614-292-8513 if you want to join the conversation. And Linda, you're on the air. You want to talk about the parents' role in all of this.
You know, when did the government start to decide? Doesn't it start with the parents? And if so, then if children don't understand what a watermelon or an eggplant is, isn't it the mother's responsibility to teach the child, and then the child can make the decision?
What do you say, Representative Kearney?
We absolutely think that the parents should be engaged in this, but 1 in 3 third graders in the state of Ohio are overweight or obese. Your Medicaid costs in the state and Medicare costs nationally are just spiking dramatically. In fact, 40% of our state budget is now Medicaid costs. We know that 70% of healthcare costs are chronic disease costs. And so while we would certainly love for parents to be taking this responsibility, we appreciate the reality of the situation, which is more and more, not only young people, but all people in our state. We're the 10th fattest state for adults, the 15th fattest state for children. And unfortunately, we cannot continue to go down this path. We're anticipating by 2015, we will be spending over $18 billion on obesity in the state of Ohio. It's just not sustainable. And so absolutely, the government needs to take a step forward and say, we need to be more proactive about this problem because you don't want to be spending the amount of your tax dollars on this problem as we move forward. In fact, you can't afford to spend the amount of tax dollars we're going to need to deal with this problem.
Linda?
What is the cause? It can't just be school lunches. There's lack of exercise or school lunches. There's lack of food education. I mean, we're going to attribute all these things and we can legislate a change. I'm sorry, but I mean, I think we really have to start with the family and educate the family because it is not the role of the government to decide. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Linda. So I guess school lunches are provided and they're out there and you want to amend them.
Yeah, I mean, I think essentially if our tax dollars currently are poisoning our children and we're not doing enough to make sure they're active, we need to be engaged in that. And certainly when you look at some of the subsidies that are being provided through the USDA, they're foods that I certainly wouldn't encourage my two young daughters to eat, and I would guess that there's a whole host of parents out there that don't want their children to be eating these things as well. And again, it's not the government alone. It's not parents alone. It's all of us working collaboratively to resolve this problem. I mean, we have an epidemic. Obesity has become the number one health epidemic in America. It's costing us more money than anything else. It's taken over smoking. We need to fight this issue on all fronts, and I certainly don't believe that the schools are going to be able to resolve this problem alone, but parents aren't going to be able to either. They're sending their children to school for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 9 months of the year, and their children are being fed in those schools. They have access to food at those schools. Oftentimes, they don't have access to exercise at those schools. We need to resolve that problem.
Noreen, you want to say something?
Well, I would just like to say that it isn't just a government solution. And in our community, the range of organizations like Local Matters, all the way to there's a Greater Columbus Growing Coalition, which is just formed of community gardeners from all across the city. There's Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, United Way, churches, parent groups. This is a problem that people are recognizing, and there are individuals and groups at every level, not just government level, that are working on it. And I think that we are moving forward in a positive direction. We have a long way to go. But legislation like this certainly helps, and the collaboration that is starting to occur. I also want to mention the Childhood Development Council of Franklin County is our Head Start agency that has just really committed a lot of its resources and its will towards this kind of effort also, as well as Franklin County Developmental Disabilities. So we have a lot that's going on here.
Regis Balaban at Cleveland Metropolitan School District, the point's been made now that you can't amend what's on the plate that the federal government is paying for. The states aren't allowed to do that. But what this bill affects the a la carte items that the district will provide in addition to the plate lunch. In a high-wealth district like Granville, I imagine that's a palatable option. That's something relatively easy to do. In a lower-wealth district like Cleveland, how does that work? What kind of a la carte items can you offer that the kids can afford to pay for?
What steps we've taken is, in fact, we're in a process of releasing a new policy to all of our principals regarding the types of items that we're suggesting that they serve. And what we did is we've been working with the Cleveland Clinic. We got a criteria from them that they used in their vending machines along with the healthier generation criteria that was provided to us. And we've come up with a substantial list which includes baked chips, various types of juice bars, a number of types of beverages, and I will say that none of it is carbonated soda. So when we put this together, the goals that we set was between calories of 200 to 250 calories, 10% of saturated fat, 35% of it from fat from calories, and no trans fat, and basically 25% percent of sugar. Everybody was in complete agreement with it. We've run it past a couple of key administrators, and we're taking those types of steps to naturally provide a healthier item to the students.
Okay. We have to take a short break, and we also have to say goodbye to State Rep. John Patrick Carney. Thanks for joining us today, Representative.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. We'll be back, but in the meantime, if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is Terry Gross. Often when I'm interviewing people on Fresh Air, they give me a different way of looking at the world.
We all thought our bike was cold in the rain, that our fish was lonely in a fishbowl, that a leaf would be afraid of heights when it fell. It's just the way we looked at things.
Join us for new ways of looking at things on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. On today's edition of Fresh Air, internal documents point to BP's repeated disregard for safety and environmental rules. A discussion with an investigative reporter who got access to these documents and has been investigating both oil and gas drilling. That discussion at noon on Fresh Air right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. See the new lineup of public affairs programming Friday nights from WOSU TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week, followed by Columbus on the Record at 8:30. Continuing at 9 is the McLaughlin Group, and at 9:30 PBS presents Need to Know, a new program with an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Watch the new public affairs lineup every Friday night beginning at 8 on WOSU TV. Currently 76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40. Sunshine today, a high of 82. Clear skies tonight, a low of 60 degrees. Sunshine for Friday and a chance of afternoon rain, a high of 88. Clouds and a rainy day expected for Saturday, a high of 85. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about healthy choices for healthy children. It's a new law in Ohio. Well, it's not a new law yet. It's supposed to be signed by the governor very soon, though. And also healthy choices for healthy children in the cafeteria at the schools. Joining us today, Greg Enslin. He is an executive chef with AIV, the company that serves Grahamville schools out there in Licking County. And also, Regis Balaban, he is Food and Child Nutrition Services Executive Director for the Cleveland Metropolitan School District. Regis, have you been a chef too before?
No, I haven't.
Okay. And then also, Noreen Warnock, she's with Local Matters. She's the Community Relations Director there. Noreen, are there big city school districts out there, low wealth? I think it's critical to address the low wealth issue out there that are doing, you know, that are model programs for the rest of us to look to.
I think one of the most important programs to look at is what's happening in the Baltimore City schools. The food service director, Tony Gerasi, has been instituting a lot of changes and purchased, I believe, around $2 million or more than $2 million worth of local fresh food last year. The Chicago School District has also done a lot of work in this area. Southern California, some of the bigger school districts are also purchasing local, purchasing more healthful food. So, I mean, the neat thing is through the National Farm to School Network, of which I'm one of two representatives for the state of Ohio, there's a lot of resources, and there are so many food service directors like Greg who are just wonderful about being willing to help everybody because they've already been on that path. And there's other food services, Chartwells and others, that have been doing this too. So they're doing it, and they're willing to share, and that's how we're learning, and that we'll be able to set these systems up so that they'll be affordable and healthful.
Regis, in Cleveland, are the kids complaining that they don't like the food as much anymore?
I wouldn't say that they're complaining. You know, when you're serving over 50,000 meals a day, you know, you're not going to satisfy 50,000 students each and every day.
I can't satisfy my own kid 10 times out of 11. So,
you know, but, you know, relative to, you know, local farms to schools or anything relative to perishable items, you know, I wanted to hit on a couple key points. Okay. I heard earlier Senator Carney reference
Representative Carney.
Indicate something about French fries. We eliminated all of our French fryers in our schools.
You just got rid of the fryers.
Yeah.
Okay.
We just got rid of, and then any of the new schools that are being constructed in the city of Cleveland, French fryers are not even included in the equipment. And a couple other things I wanted to reference is the fresh fruit and vegetable program. We've been on a program with the Department of Defense whereby it links back into the donated commodity program. And through them, over a number of years, they've been providing us I believe the numbers have been something like at first we brought in about $265,000 worth of fresh produce through them, and this past year it was up over $430,000. Another wonderful program that we were finally able to get the USDA to make a permanent end of regulation is the fresh fruit and vegetable program, and I believe they allocated like 40-some million dollars to this program nationwide. Naturally, you have to apply through ODE, but one parent was referencing, you know, it does start at home, and I agree. You know, anything that we do in life basically starts at home. Mm-hmm. However, we do have a responsibility in our schools to, number one, educate them, and also, number one, feed them good food and healthy food. With that being said, under this fresh fruit and vegetable program, we have an opportunity to provide items that the students or the children very seldom have even seen at home, and it gives them an opportunity to go home, talk about it, and then encourage their parents to go out into the grocery stores and purchase them.
A lot of times, though, in cities like Cleveland and in many parts of Columbus, there aren't a lot of fresh produce. There's not a lot of access to fresh foods. Noreen, what do you do about that? And we have an email from a listener. What are you doing to get kids in urban school districts involved in community garden programs? Not only do they not know what common veggies are or how to cook them, they have no clue what kind of work it takes to grow them. So there's that aspect, and there's just access.
Well, access is a serious issue, and that's another one that we're working with a lot of organizations and agencies to deal with. A major part of that is community engagement processes at the local level that bring people together. And Local Matters, for example, will be working in Wineland Park this summer on this type of a process that brings people together to look at what kind of access do they have, what access don't they have, and how do they want to solve that issue. Some communities want community gardens, and we have a lot of them in Columbus. We have school gardens we're finding a lot of success with them. But maybe in that community they want corner stores that have more access. Maybe they want a mobile market that could go around to seniors and others who don't have. Transportation is a major issue,
right,
in these neighborhoods. So we're doing a lot and encouraging at the community level, community engagement, to work on the access issues. We also have the Ohio Food Policy Council in Ohio that is working on healthy food access issues, as well as the Columbus Health Department and United Way. I know I'm leaving people and organizations out, but access is an issue. We are working on it. And there's going to be a wide range of solutions. A major thing we have to start thinking about is what are the systemic issues that are causing this lack of access? How are we really going to deal with poverty? We have to get a grip on poverty in order to be able to solve a lot of these problems, and that's something people are talking about.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to question or comment our guest today. Jerry, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ms. Fisher, and guests, a wonderful program. First of all, I'd like to address Linda's comments. The problem is that
our earlier caller, right?
Yeah, the average working wage worker today isn't making any money purchasing wise than he was 40 years ago in 1970. That's a fact. But the other thing is that people, husbands and wives, are both working, and they don't have time to get into this. Sadly, it's because of the poverty issue. But I do agree that you spend money now, you're going to save it later. Now, I'd like to recommend three books that I think every school should have, and
okay,
for the children as well as to take home and let the parents read.
Okay.
First is Fighting the Food Giants by Paul Stitt. The second is Sugar Blues by William Dufty. Sugar, when I went to high school, you had to leave the campus area to get Coke.
Yep.
I mean,
me too.
That was ridiculous. That whoever did that was all. It's all money. The third one is, The Poisons in Your Food by William Longgood, published back in the '60s, over 40 years ago, probably 45 years ago. I've got all.
Well, they have new poisons since then, so I don't know.
Well, no. Wonder Bread. Don't let your kids eat Wonder Bread. they use this enriched with what? White flour. It has no food value. The Continental Bakery loves it because they can store it in the open, and the rats won't bother it.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
All right.
And when the Drellis brothers, immigrants from Greece, opened a sandwich shop in the late 30s in my hometown, you went in there and you got a hamburger. You didn't get French fries. You got a dollop of coleslaw. Good old coleslaw with vinegar, you know. French fries, I found out, I wondered why I never ate them in high school. They weren't introduced in the United States till 1946, is what I understand. I could be all wrong on that. But anyway, keep on having these great programs, Ms. Fisher, and thanks to your guests also. Appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, Jerry. Thanks for listening. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. If the food's not there, Greg, what's been your experience? Now, you haven't had a lot of complaints. You've more than doubled participation in the lunch program. So that means that kids were bringing their lunch to school or they were going out to get it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's allowed in Granville or not, but to do that. But what that happened all in 1 year, was that just word of mouth?
I think it was word of mouth. It was just the freshness of the product, the appeal of the product. Also, at the high school, we have more options than they previously had. I mean, we have several different stations. We're looking at 7 different options a day at the high school. Plus, we have a sandwich, a deli station, which wraps salads made to order. So it's a more availability, more choices.
If those kind of things are made to order, doesn't that require more human resource?
I have one person working the station.
And you pay for that as well. That's all worked into the bottom line. The bottom line. Regis, what are your challenges ahead? You sounds like you've done a lot, and the guests in the studio are nodding their head approvingly as they listen to your plans and your what you've done so far.
Well, you know, I want to thank you, Ann, for saying that I've done a lot, but, you know, there's a lot more to do. And with that being said, you know, I could go on for hours and hours talking about our program and also, you know, what we're all faced with nationwide. I'm very vocal relative to support of the program and supporting any families out there that need that assistance. I want to talk about a wonderful program that we just started. We implemented it about 6 weeks ago, maybe 8 weeks ago. And what we did is I hooked up a partnership with the Cleveland Clinic, their executive chef, and I've been working with Dr. Mike Roizen. And what we've done is I selected 2 schools to do this pilot program in, and it's referencing our breakfast program. We've taken the approach that you can make changes, and I selected one school that was built in 1923. We serve the students down in the basement of the building, and it's nothing but cement blocks. The other building is a new building that we built last year in 2009, and we have a beautiful kitchen in it with great equipment. What we've done is we're serving the students nothing but, when I say nothing, bear with me, we're serving them nothing but unsugared cereal, Cheerios, Kix, Rice Chicks. And we're cutting fresh fruit up every day. We're serving the fresh fruit along with skim milk and 1% white milk.
No Pop-Tarts?
No Pop-Tarts. No. No strawberry milk. I don't know. What else can I say? Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a wonderful program. And we've taken away the 100% fruit juice that we were serving basically almost every day that the kids actually did like. And when we started the program, within a couple, 2-3 days or within a week, you know, we were explaining to them what the fresh fruit was. You know, we're cutting up fresh strawberries, blueberries, we're serving them, sliced bananas, pineapple chunks. And, you know, explaining to them what to do and put it on their cereal or eat it separately is just such a tremendous change that we're experiencing, which we knew we would, but we're teaching the students at such a young age that this is the right way to eat. This is the best way to eat. This is healthy food that you're getting. And along with it, 2 days a week, we're making a smoothie. We're making a breakfast smoothie for the students. That's made out of blueberries, strawberries, fresh bananas, fresh oranges in it, and orange juice. And it's just phenomenal on how it's working. In this smoothie also is plain yogurt and tofu. It's been their students are very receptive to it. Naturally, there's going to be a cost to it. But again, like I said earlier, that cost factor is we do it now and prevent future high medical cost. Working with the clinic has been a tremendous experience for all of us, and our intent is to phase it into other schools as additional resources become available.
Regis, how long have you been in the business?
You would ask, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Well, I'm closing in on my 36th year.
Then this has to be a pretty interesting sort of watershed moment. I say moment, but at least period of time while as things are changing like this.
Because you're right, Ann. I hate to interrupt you, but you're absolutely on target when you say that. I know I'm doing it now, and I'm very proud and happy of what we're accomplishing. However, I wish we would have had these opportunities 10, 12 years ago.
Does it feel like you sort of have permission now?
Well, you know what? We're starting to see that more and more people are becoming more and more aware of really what is needed and what's required. And we're working with some key individuals, throughout the nation that are paying some attention to, what we've been asking for years. And what we need to do is be influential enough that USDA sees this and starts increasing reimbursement to us that other school districts that don't have the funds and the resources and that are going to be reimbursed in a way that they can also move forward and make these changes.
Noreen, does it feel like the change is coming?
Oh, I think we've seen a lot of change. In fact, Edible Columbus magazine is going to be putting out their next edition, and there's an article that Michael, our executive director, and I co-wrote about the changes that have happened in Ohio starting in 1995, and they go back before that, but we had to pick a date. It's a movement. It's not a trend, and it's a local, from the local level all the way to the national, international level. When you talk about the reimbursement rates, this is an opportunity for people to get on the phone or go to Washington and talk to their legislators. The reauthorization of the Child Nutrition Act is happening right now. Upping those reimbursement rates is a possibility. Also, going from only $50 million to $1 billion implement food to school programs is a possibility, so that there are things that people can do that can really push for this to happen even more quickly than it is now. But we still need to do a lot of work.
We have a lot more to talk about, but we've run out of time, as usual, and I'm really getting hungry. I'd like to thank my guest, Greg Enslin, Granville School's executive chef via the company he works for, AVI. Thanks for being with us, Greg.
Thank you.
And also Noreen Warnock, Local Matters Community Relations Director. Noreen, thanks for joining us today.
It was great. Thank you.
And Regis Balaban, Food and Child Nutrition Services Executive Director, going on how many years now?
36. I want to put 36 more in. I don't know if they're going to let me.
Okay. Well, with the Cleveland Metropolitan School District, we're so glad you could join us today, Regis.
Well, I thank you, Ann, for an opportunity of being on your program and reaching some important people that listen to your show.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Marburn Academy, a forward-thinking school for ADHD and dyslexic students, inviting you to a parent seminar on understanding the problems of ADHD children, Tuesday, June 15th at 7 p.m. More at marburnacademy.org.